My next guest is our sportscaster from the United States of America, Helene Elliott. Kia ora, Helene. Welcome back to Nights.
Lovely to speak with you. How are you?
I'm very well. Whereabouts are you on the road at the moment?
No, actually, I just got back home. I made three trips to Edmonton, Canada in the last 2 weeks for ice hockey playoffs, and it's a very long trip, so I'm a little woozy. I'm not sure what day it is or what time it is, but I'm comfy and cozy in my own home right now.
Edmonton, so I'm assuming if it's the playoffs, it's the Stanley Cup, and it's your own team, the LA Kings, playing. What's the name of the Edmonton side?
The Edmonton Oilers.
The Oilers.
Edmonton is, there's a very big oil industry in the Canadian province of Alberta, where Edmonton is located.
Yes.
So they are the Oilers.
Our Canadian correspondent actually isn't too far from there. She's in Alberta. She lives in Medicine Hat.
Oh, yeah.
Yes. And I forgot to ask her, because we had her on just last week, about the playoffs, because she could have given us a Canadian perspective. Is there, when a U.S. team plays a Canadian team, is there a bit of extra edge in the competition, the rivalry, do you think?
Yeah, it was actually an interesting matchup, because the L.A. team, the Kings, were not supposed to make the playoffs. Most of the so-called experts didn't think they'd be good enough to make the playoffs, but they did. And the Edmonton Oilers have the National Hockey League's best player, a player named Connor McDavid, who's just a magician. If you ever have a chance to see him, it's really worth it just to marvel at what a human being can do while on hockey skates and carrying a stick and the magic an athlete can pull off. He's the best player in the league. He won the scoring championship. People thought that it would be a mismatch, but it actually went down to the wire. It went to the seventh game, which made me travel to Edmonton for a third time.
Was part of you hoping that Edmonton would win easily and you wouldn't have to travel so much?
Well, I tend to root for whoever wins the first game of any playoff series. You know, people say, "Oh, who do you root for?" And I really don't. I root for good games that nobody gets hurt. But, you know, from a selfish perspective and from a travel perspective, I'll root for the team that wins the first game so that maybe it'll be over quicker. But this one went the distance.
Because it is an extraordinary playoff series, best of seven games. And this is what, for the right to go to the Stanley Cup final or just the semifinals?
This is for the right to go to the second round of the playoffs. There's four rounds. So it was it was an awful lot of travel for it. It's a very bad format. In Major League Baseball and the World Series, they'll also do best of seven, but they'll do it at two games in one city, then three games in the other city, and then two games in the first city. They'll go back to the first city, and it gives you more time to get settled in. A format of 2-3-2. In hockey, it's 2-2-1-1-1. And as in this match between Edmonton and Los Angeles, the distance between the two cities can be quite a bit.
Who won in the end?
Edmonton did. They earned it. They were the better team. But the interesting thing for me was there's still such strict COVID requirements. Going into Canada from the United States, you just needed to do proof of vaccine. But in order to get back into the United States, I had to get a COVID test within 24 hours of my flight. So there was some scrambling going on to make sure I had the proper tests and the proper paperwork. And in the United States, you don't have to wear masks in airports anymore. But in Canada, you do, and in Canada, you're still Canadian airlines still require passengers to wear masks while on planes. So it's also you're navigating all these different rules and regulations and all of that. So and the rules tend to change pretty quickly and pretty often. So becomes a guessing game sometimes.
Where do you get your test from? Do you go to a pharmacy at the airport or what?
I went to a pharmacy in downtown Edmonton. I went there 3 times. They knew me by the 3rd time. and they do a rapid test is acceptable. And they do the test and they print out a form saying that it was negative and what time they took the test. And it's signed by the pharmacist. And when I was checking into my flight, they asked for that form. So they are not kidding around. They are very serious about this.
Now, for Edmonton, the Oilers, which have now gone to the next round, obviously they aspire to win the Stanley Cup, how many more games will they have to play if they make it to the Stanley Cup, and not including that final 7, which is what you play in the final?
Well, there's 4 rounds, so they've just won the 1st round, and each of these rounds is best of 7, so if every series went the distance, the winner of the Stanley Cup could conceivably play 28 games.
And this is just in the playoffs, because haven't you already had a round of home and away games?
Right, yeah. Regular season is 82 games, yeah. And what happened was because of COVID and you know, the world changed and sporting league schedules changed, last year's hockey season went very late. So this year's started a little bit late, and it won't end until the end of June. And as you might guess, when the weather gets warmer, it's difficult to keep hockey rinks cold and difficult to keep the ice surfaces suitable and safe for the players. So they're trying to get these playoff games played very quickly. They're trying to get this over with as soon as they can, and then they hope to go back to a normal schedule of October through early June for next season.
Because we've spoken, I think, many years ago now, and you told me some of the remarkable things that indoor stadiums in the States and Canada can do, and how quickly they can freeze the surface of the ice hockey playing area so that you can have a game. And then maybe a few days later it's been used to play basketball, the same arena.
Absolutely. A lot of stadiums are multi-purpose. In Los Angeles, the arena where the Kings play hockey also has the Lakers playing basketball and the Clippers playing basketball. So there's a lot of changeovers. I mean, what happens is they'll put the ice down. They'll put in arenas that have hockey teams and, you know, other events going on. The ice will stay down all year. They'll make the ice in like August or September, and they'll leave it down all year. And what they'll do is when it's time for basketball or concerts or other events, they'll put special floors on top of the ice hockey rink.
If you walk onto the special floor, can you tell there's ice underneath? Does it feel a bit cold?
Sometimes there's gaps, and yes, at Laker games, sometimes it is very cold because you're sitting basically just above the ice. You're sitting in the end, near the end boards.
I mean, that in itself seems extraordinary to me. But then what you just said before about the number of games in the playoffs that you might, well, the number of games, if you wanted to make it to the final, the Stanley Cup, you might end up playing 80 plus. And and ice hockey is a tough contact sport. It seems like an extraordinary ask of the players. I know they're professionals, but still, it's a tough sport to be playing so many games in a year.
I absolutely agree, and I think the players would agree with you, too. You just see so many injuries, and I suspect a lot of them are from fatigue. You're flying back and forth between cities. You're playing a lot of games in a short time span. You know, your body just gets fatigued, even though, you know, players, athletes are flown on, you know, luxury airplanes and things like that, but you're still changing time zones. You're still playing a lot of games in a short period of time. And as you said, ice hockey is so physical that you're going to have muscle pulls and bruises and sprains and you know, things like that. But I think you see a lot of players becoming injured, and it's too bad because you want to see the stars play when it's the most important time of the year in the playoffs, and unfortunately a lot of them are injured by this time.
I remember speaking to you about studies and the growing weight of evidence about long-term damage from concussion for mm-hmm. American football players. And that has become an issue now for us in New Zealand with our favourite forms of football, rugby, rugby union, and rugby league, increasingly. I wonder whether it's also an issue for ice hockey players.
It is, and it's a matter of dispute because the commissioner of the Ice Hockey League is a lawyer. Not that there's anything wrong with lawyers. Would you call it a barrister or attorney or whatever the equivalent term is, but he refuses to acknowledge any established link between serious head trauma and problems such as CTE, which are, you know, brain damage. For legal reasons, I guess if he admits that there's some kind of link, that leaves the league open to lawsuits. So he has been very adamant in saying that there's not enough evidence to prove that repeated head trauma leads to long-term damage. And obviously there are players who have had long-term damage, who have, you know, a lot of players who they would call tough guys, you know, guys who have been involved in fights a lot, who have had repeated, you know, punches to the head. There's been a lot of them documented, a lot of cases documented where these players killed themselves because they were so traumatized and their brains and their brain chemistry and everything was just so damaged by what they did for a living that they couldn't bear it anymore. And a number of athletes have been leaving their brains to science so that, you know, CTE can only be diagnosed after death. It can't be diagnosed while a person is living. But a lot of football players have left their brains to science and some hockey players as well. And CTE has been found in those brains. And it's really a terrible thing.
I mean, I imagine that people who play the game love the game and don't want to stop playing the game. And you love watching it. I know you've told me how much you love watching ice hockey. So is there some kind of middle ground where you can acknowledge that this is something which has to be managed without opening yourself up to lawsuits? Or am I being naive here?
No, I think you're asking a very good question. And I think it's that more attention needs to be paid to strict penalties for hits to the head. And the National Hockey League has been more strict about that. There are more penalties for players who whose principal contact is to the head of their opponent. But I think that it has to be enforced from the youngest ages upward, and respect has to be taught from the youngest ages upward, so that by the time you're a pro or you're in college or in the minor leagues, you are accustomed to not hitting somebody in the head. You know, it's difficult to legislate, and no matter how many rules you put in, there are cases where things accidentally happen. You know, somebody trips and hits his head or whatever, and things like, you can't take that out of the game 100%. But I think the penalties need to be much, much tougher than they are.
Do you think that the load in terms of the pressure on professional players, that 80-plus games we talked about before, if you're going to go all the way on in the Stanley Cup, I mean, some of those earlier rounds, those knockout rounds, could they reduce the number of games to maybe best out of three rather than best out of seven?
Well, then that would mean that the owners don't make as much money on tickets, selling tickets. And the league doesn't make as much money from television revenues or streaming revenues. In most leagues, certainly, I know in the National Basketball Association as well, they used to play two of three or three of five in playoff rounds. But now they realize how much more money they could make if it's a best of seven. So every round is best of seven.
Ice hockey coming towards the end of the season. I'm assuming that baseball's up and running, is it, yet?
Yeah. The Los Angeles Dodgers have been playing very well. They're a big source of conversation here. I mean, Los Angeles is such a big city and so sprawling, and we have so many ethnic groups and so many people from so many different countries. To me, it's always seemed that the Dodgers is the one thing that everybody has in common. Everybody has gone to a Dodger game or at least followed the Dodgers a little bit. It's the one thing that everybody in Los Angeles can talk about and can kind of agree on.
Weren't they originally from Brooklyn? It was the whole franchise
Indeed.
That moved from one side of the states to the other?
Yes, the Brooklyn Dodgers and the then New York Giants moved after the 1957 season. Both left New York and moved to, the Dodgers moved to Los Angeles, and the Giants moved to San Francisco. And that was arranged so that they had a close opponent. You know, otherwise the closest opponent for either of them, the closest trip would have been to St. Louis, which isn't very close at all.
I mean, that's so that was the, I mean, why did they move in the first place? Couldn't they just have started up a team in Los Angeles and San Fran?
Well, see, that was the threat that there was a rival league wanted to come into existence, and Major League Baseball wouldn't have gotten any money from that. So Major League Baseball said, try to get out ahead of that and head that off and allowed the Brooklyn Dodgers and the New York Giants to move to the West Coast. And then eventually there was expansion. The New York Mets baseball team was born, and the Houston Astros were born. So Major League Baseball kind of headed off this threat of a rival league and kept the territories all to itself.
Here's a baseball team we prepared earlier.
I'm sorry?
Here's a baseball team we prepared earlier. It's possibly a joke you wouldn't get. It's a cooking...
No.
Probably not. It's a cooking show that only viewed in New Zealand. The chef, Alison Holst, would say, and here's something I prepared earlier, like to save time. You know, you've got the dish already there. In this case,
gotcha,
it's a baseball team.
So you don't see the... Got it. Okay, sorry. Didn't get that one.
No, that's all right, Helene. I should have really thrown it that way. It was a bit of a curveball, so to speak. Can I finish by asking you about tennis? Now, I think the last time we spoke, Wimbledon had just announced it wasn't going to be hosting Russian players to its competition, and I don't know whether the French Open has followed suit or not. That might be old news, but I thought you'd probably know.
It's my recollection that they... You know, I'm actually not sure. Absolutely, Wimbledon is still such a source of contention, and I think, though, that more people are coming to the side of agreeing that the Russian players should not be allowed to play in Wimbledon. I think there was an outcry at first of, you know, hey, these players aren't responsible for what their government does, but I think as the war and the atrocities in Ukraine have gone on, I think more and more people are agreeing that it's the right thing to do.
And is it something you're coming around to? Because I seem to remember you being a little bit equivocal about bans and the merit of banning players, given that countries have been doing bad things to each other for years.
Yeah, and then people can say, well, you know, the United States started wars here or did, you know, terrible things there. Why don't we ban Americans next? And why don't we ban this country? And, you know, in an ideal world, sport would be separate from politics. But unfortunately, they mix. They're intertwined, and you can't separate them.
Because sport means so much to people, Helene.
Mm-hmm, yeah. And people use sport as a reflection of glory. I mean, in Russia, Putin is known to be a sports fan, a hockey fan, and I know he hosted some Olympic athletes for some ceremonies recently and you know, used them as symbols of how great Russia was because it produced all these wonderful athletes. So people manipulate athletes and use sport for their own gain when, you know, again, in an ideal world, which we don't live in, sport would exist for the sake of sport.
Helene, it's always lovely talking with you, and thanks very much for joining us in Los Angeles, where I'm guessing the time is, it's probably coming up to 25 minutes to 3 in the morning.
That's exactly right, yes.
I hope you're at home, Helene.
I am, yes.
Yeah, if you were at work, the traffic wouldn't be so bad to go home now, I would say.
No, although late at night, people, when the roads are empty, you get people driving terribly, terribly fast. So that can be bad, too. They think they're on a racetrack.
So nice to talk to you again, Helene. Thanks for your time.
You too. Thank you.
Helene Elliott from the Los Angeles Times, back with more sport from her perspective. In about 6 weeks,